Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. It's a Thursday and harvest is rolling across the country. Also, crops are getting planted, and that's what's amazing for me as it starts getting colder here. We've got a frost warning tonight on our farm, and yet there's other parts of the country that are planting right now. So kind of nice to hear what's going on around the country. Our phone lines will be open. I shouldn't even say around the country, across the continent, I should probably say. That'd be more accurate. Our phone lines are open today at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us radio@agphd.com.
Okay, so as we get started today, one of the things I was thinking about yesterday, or from yesterday, Darren, I answered a question about cheap pyrethroid, and some farmer was wondering, how's he get $2 pyrethroid? I'm like, well, you should find it just about anywhere. You know, we talk about economics an awful lot here on the show. Yes, agronomics are super important, but at the end of the day, you gotta make money. If you don't make any money, then you're not going forward. So it's got to be this combination of we want to increase yield, but we've got to figure out a way to do it profitably. Now, unfortunately, we get many times as farmers really focused on cost. I was listening to somebody talk about that today with the cost side, and it's like, well, yep, everything you're going to do in life to make money pretty much is going to cost something. It's going to cost money or time. Otherwise, you're not going to make any money. But we've got to always figure out or do our best to figure out which things give us the best chance to provide a good return on investment. And that's what hopefully we are doing for you and talking through some of these different things. And so when you hear us talk about almost anything, we're going to give you the good and the bad. We're going to talk about, okay, it's more likely to pay in this case. It's less likely to pay in this case. And that's not to say that it could be less likely, but it could still happen. Just like I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan. I mean, they're the worst team in the league. They could still win a game. Okay. On the flip side, you know, there are some of these things as crop input investments where we go, oh, man, that's a no-brainer. You got to do that every time. I'll give you the example that everybody pretty much can agree with. You have to put nitrogen on to raise good corn, right? You got to apply nitrogen. Well, not in all cases. Every once in a while, there's enough that gets generated out of the soil that creates a whole bunch of nitrogen, and then there's some other fluke thing that happens, and nitrogen doesn't pay. So we can't guarantee one way or the other that something's going to or not going to pay, but what we can help you do is figure out the factors that would lead it to being more likely or less likely. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
All right. Whenever we talk about tillage, we generally get some feedback. Well, why do you do this, or why don't you do that? And VS sent us a note saying, why not use cover crops? That other practice will kill the soil, ruin the environment, and is of poor nutritional value. And I just think about this. Cover crops just don't fit in every spot all the time. And here's a great example. We're harvesting right now. There are farmers hundreds of miles south of us that are harvesting right now too. They've got 80 degree weather plus. They've got a long fall ahead of them where they're not going to get snow and all these kinds of things. We might freeze tonight. We might have snow.
Well, yeah, but the ground isn't going to be
really
frozen. But your point is, we don't have a lot
of growing season left.
Right. So, yeah, we're not going to freeze tonight. But, I mean, even if we did, certain plants will still grow down to 20, 24 degrees. So that's not that big a deal. But what I always talk about with this cover crop thing is we already have a cover crop. It's called corn or soybeans. We're planting as soon as the ground thaws in the spring. We are harvesting right before freeze up in the winter. There's no extra time. So we're already raising a cover crop. And there are just some situations, like for example, the last 2 years, super wet. Well, what am I going to do when I had to get the crop out of the field? I'm not going to wait until wintertime when the snow flies. And sure, then the ground's frozen. But then I lost a bunch of my corn and beans. We were just a minute ago talking about economics. You have to have the economics there. So we will get our crop out before the snow flies. It will happen. We will do that on our farm. You see where I'm going with this. Okay, so if I'm going to do that, sometimes that means I'm going to make some ruts in the field. okay, well, if I've got ruts in the field, how am I going to fix that without tillage? Cover crops aren't going to fix ruts in the field. So, you know, there are just some times when tillage is necessary. And certainly we talk about the benefits of cover crops. We talk about the benefits of no-till and strip-till and all these things. But those are each tools. And at the end of the day, like I said earlier, you got to figure out how you're going to produce more yield, how you're going to make money, and how you're going to do a great job with the environment. And to say that it can all be solved with cover crops, that's absolutely not true.
All right. We were talking about residue management here. Well, of course, we're talking about this almost every day now since we're right in the middle of harvest. But we got a question from Brian who was wondering, you were talking about chopping corn heads. I'm wondering how many seasons of experience have you got with chopping corn heads? Are there situations where you see that they don't work as well as others where they work well?
Okay. Probably 10 years or more we've been running chopping corn heads. I love them because in our environment, we don't have a lot of rainfall. We're harvesting right before freeze up. We don't have we plant right away in the spring before or just after the spring thaw, just after the ground thaws out. So there isn't a lot of time for that residue to break down where there is heat. Okay, so the residue isn't going to break down very well. And what we ended up happening when we didn't use a chopping corn head is corn stalks would tip over. I mean, we might harvest them tall, whatever. They'd tip over. Then you're trying to cut through those with a coulter on your planter, and it just doesn't work. Because in the spring when we're planting, a lot of times it's 40 degrees and damp outside. So you hairpin that residue, you don't have a good stand, and that leads to poor yields. And you miss out on a lot of dollars. The biggest disadvantage is, I mean, in addition to it costs a little more, it's going to take more horsepower. The other thing that some people will talk about is how when it's chopped up, all that residue, it can blow easier. So what we suggest is leave the stalk stand a little taller. Instead of cutting them down to 6 or 8 inches, leave them at, say, a foot and a half if you want to avoid some of that. So anyway, we do really love chopping corn heads, but they cost a little money and take a little more horsepower. Well, we'll get to your phone calls right after this.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
When it comes to effective herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Burnmaster, Scorch, and Spitfire for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these unprecedented times, you're facing unprecedented pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Today, our phone lines are open all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'd love to hear from you, love to hear what's going on your farms right now. Or if you have any agronomic questions we can help you out with, we're always open to that too. Let's head down to Missouri. We've got Danny with us right now. Danny, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for taking my call. Appreciate it.
So what's happening on your farm?
Well, we're still early in harvest. None of the beans are really ready to harvest yet. We're probably 2 weeks away. Early in corn harvest, our yields run from 140 to 185, and it's running about 19 moisture. So that's about okay. I wish it was a little bit drier than that, down to 16 or 17, but we'll stay on corn for a couple more weeks and then switch over to beans. And then once the leaves drop off there, we're going to go after the beans pretty aggressive. The beans look pretty good. Don't know yet. We think we have at least a 40 bushel yield, maybe possibly better. So we just, for whatever reason, we're in the pattern where we get a lot of rain. We had 2 inches there on Sunday afternoon, and it just things are just a little bit slow to dry out.
Yeah, I wish we could trade spots with you a little bit on that rain. We haven't had any rain for a long time here. We could sure use some. But you know what? Too much rain is probably even more of a challenge for us than not enough. And on your farm, would you say that's the case too, that getting too much is just a problem for you?
Well, I don't want to say a problem, because an old farmer told me when I was a lot younger, never complain about the rain, because you're always going to wish you had a rain.
Good point.
It goes away a lot faster. So I don't want to say it's a problem. It's more of a challenge. Things are a lot slower pace, which sometimes is very difficult to deal with, whereas when you're on the drier side, everything just happens a lot quicker, and it's just easier to do things when things are on a quicker pace than on the slow down, drag it out pace. So,
yep, I certainly can understand that. Now, one thing I think about, when you get those late rains like that, are you seeing some late weed emergers? I know that often happens to us if we catch too much late rain. Now the crop canopy is gone as leaves start to drop and so forth, and we see some late weeds popping up.
Yeah, you will see a little bit of henbit, more of anything is what you will see in that situation. August is when we really have the problem with that. But, you know, we're way past August now, and the only thing we have is the henbit is the only weed that we really have show up when leaves. But that's really not too much of a problem until you get to mid-November or late November because of the rain. So we're pretty fortunate about that. We don't have the good soils like you guys do there in on your farm. So, but we strive to try to make it better anyway. We'd still like to put down our lime and put down some manure on there, you know, when harvest is done, and you don't want to get out there in the fields. So the biggest challenge is getting it ready for next year's crop, that you don't want to have any compaction. Obviously, you know, you don't want to get out there and leave a little bit of a rut either. So that's the biggest challenge after, you know, I guess harvest is, but that there really slows you down for what plans you want to make for next year.
Yeah, no question about it. Compaction is certainly a big challenge when you have wet harvests, and we've gotten through a couple of those recently here on our farm as well. So being a little dry this year, at least we aren't as much worried about the compaction issue as we would otherwise be. Well, Danny, thank you so much. It was great talking to you here. I know you're early on in this corn harvest. Hopefully it continues going well, and good luck as you head into soybeans as well.
Well, you too. I appreciate it, Darren.
Matt, thanks. Let's head out to California. We've got Steve with us right now. Steve, how are you doing?
Good, Darren. How are you?
Good. Okay. Are you planting or are you harvesting or both right now?
Well, about both. We just finished yesterday harvesting our lettuce seed production crops, and we're planting spring mix and spinach right now for the fall crop.
Excellent. That's a fun time of year to get putting that next crop in. So talk to us about lettuce seed harvest. That sounds kind of interesting. I've never been around that.
Well, it's lettuce seed. You know, there's a lot of different techniques. I mean, and I grow for various different companies, and we grow for various different countries. So I think we've got about 10 countries worth of production on our ground, and so each company kind of has their own program. Some to harvest by hand, some use a combine, and then the more high tech guys have a actual kind of a shaker. It kind of operates similar to like a grape harvester, where it just shakes the vines and drops the seed into a tray, and then puts it up into a tote, and then they can come back and harvest it multiple times. But if they harvest by hand, or if they harvest with a combine, they only get one chance.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. Lots of different techniques and lots of different countries. And this is one thing that was interesting to me as I've gotten to travel the world. There's some areas that are just better suited to producing the seed that is going to be used around the world. It was down in New Zealand a couple of years ago, and they were talking about producing carrot seed and how many countries that ends up going to. And yeah, it's pretty important what's going on in California, getting seed for lettuce for multiple countries. Now, where you're at in California, are fires an issue in your area, or are you out of that zone?
Well, I mean, we're not where we farm, we don't have any fires. But yeah, in the mountains near us, in the Sierras, yeah, it's quite a big problem. And the smoke has been just terrible lately. Today it's still pretty bad. The sun's orange and the moon's orange at night, but definitely a lot of smoke in our area. But yeah, we're right up against the Sierras. To the east of us is where the fires had been raging. They've slowed down now. They've got better control of them.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, it's been a scary thing, and we've noticed the smoke even out here in the Midwest that's coming that way. So it's been a challenge, no doubt. So as you're putting this next crop in, is that going to impact that in a big way in terms of just you're not getting the full sun like you normally would?
Well, I don't think it'll affect us so much. It is definitely affecting the wine grape growers. Matter of fact, I was talking to a crop insurance adjuster the other day, and she was going out to look at wine grapes, and they send in samples to see, you know, how tainted they are with the flavor, and then they decide if their insurance has to kick in or not. I mean, that's a big issue in the wine grapes. And we've got not just Napa's got a big fire going on right now, but there's a lot of wine grapes along the central coast, and that's where she mainly works, out of Paso Robles area. And they've got there hadn't been any fires in the area, but there's been so much smoke in the area that they may have to go into some insurance to cover some of those expenses, because the wineries don't want that smoky taint in their grapes.
Wow, yeah, that is something I didn't even think about, that would happen. All right, talk to us about the crops that you're planting right now. When you're putting them in, how long until these crops will be harvested?
Well, the fall crop, we grow a lot of spring mix and spinach, which is, you know, harvested when it's only 3 or 4 inches tall. So we plant the middle of September, and we'll harvest the end of October, so 45 days. And then we'll harvest that off and on until about Thanksgiving, and then the group heads to the desert for the wintertime, and then they'll come back up here in the spring. We plant in mid-January and harvest in mid March in the springtime. And then we are putting in some kale and arugula seed crops right now, and that's a longer duration. We'll plant in early October, we'll harvest in mid to late June on that seed.
Yeah, that is fun. I love the diversity of crops that you get to work with. It sounds pretty exciting, especially for somebody who, wow, we thought we really had it this year. We had four different crops on our farm, and most of our neighbors have got two. But still, it's not very much compared to what you're doing out there.
Yeah, and we're getting ready for winter in the citrus crop, so I've got to put some wind machines in this year on a new planting of citrus. So we do a little bit of tree fruit as well.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun. We're talking with Steve out in California. Steve, thank you so much. Really appreciate you sharing what's going on out there, and good luck to everybody with the fires and everything that's going on in California.
I appreciate it. Take care. Thanks.
You bet. Thanks. Listening to Ag PhD Radio, and our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. If you would like to call in, talk about what's happening in your area or on your farm, or ask an agronomic question, we would love to help with that too. If you're more comfortable with email, our email address is radio@agphd.com. Or on social media, you can find us on Twitter @AgPhDMedia, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. We'll be right back after this.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
I'll take predictability where I can get it.
With their CropWise seed selector, NK Seeds combines local knowledge and local data to show me where their seed fits.
And even where it doesn't. Because out here, predictability is hard to come by. And success matters. Find your seed at nkseeds.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior in our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim. I'm a farmer, and I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
Pentair Hypro 3D nozzles are your premier choice for fungicide applications. Syngenta fungicide application field trials have shown Hypro 3D nozzles provide a yield advantage of up to 10% over other nozzles, maximizing the return on your fungicide investment. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. Condition your grain for ideal moisture with the Endzone. Visit farmshopmfg.com for more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Our phone lines are open throughout the show today at 844-442-4743. That's 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head out to North Carolina. Get Isaac with us right now. Isaac, how's it going for you?
Oh, good. It's a beautiful, sunny Carolina day.
Excellent. Excellent. What's happening on the farm?
Well, we're working on cutting some beans. We finished up with corn last week, so kind of moving through the fall harvest season.
Yeah, so talk to us about the corn a little bit. Were you happy with how things turned out? Did corn dry down well for you? What was this fall like for you?
It was a little bit of a we were a little underwhelmed, I guess. We had a really wet start and a dry finish, which I think a lot of people can identify with that. But then we also had high-end tropical storm Isaias, and that caused a lot of damage for us. It laid a lot of corn over, and it shut some corn down early. So it harvest drug on for a while this year.
Yeah, it can be a little bit frustrating. And, you know, the other thing is, as you're going through that, you know, you've got all those beans coming up as well. How are the beans turning out? Are you happy with them so far?
We're satisfied so far. You know, yields are a little variable there. We had a lot of really heavy stink bug pressure this year, so it stuck some leaves a little bit longer than we would have seen ordinarily as well.
Okay, talk to us about the stink bugs for just a minute, if you don't mind, because this is a problem where we're at in the Western Corn Belt. We have a few stink bugs, but it hasn't been this major issue for us yet. Is it that they're piercing pods? Is it just that they're hurting the plant and hurting plant health? What is the big challenge?
It's both. They're kind of a season-long pest for us. I think one thing is when we get into pod set, especially early pod set, they can pierce the pods and hit the seeds. Or if they hit the seeds later in the season, then we'll see some more seed damage. But this year what we really saw was the plant response to all the heavy feeding. And so the stems stayed green and the leaves stayed on. And so it creates a plant response for some of the earlier beans that we would have thought about maybe desiccating. We weren't able to get very good penetration of those chemicals just because the plant seemed to be impervious to it. So it's really kind of an all of the above in terms of the kind of damage you can see from them.
Yeah, that is no fun. No fun at all. So, okay, you're harvesting beans now. Corn is done. What happens on your farm next? Is there a cover crop that goes in? Is there tillage that gets done, fertility work?
Yeah, so we're moving into our fall burn down where we're coming in behind the corn. We had some escapes in the season from the herbicide program. We're trying to get them knocked out. We use a fair amount of layer compost, and so we're looking at getting some of that out and cover cropping behind it. And then the other big thing for us is land forming and land shaping, trying to get our field sort so we can shed that water. And that's a winter long project.
Yeah, you got a lot of work coming up, no doubt about that. All right, so talk to us about temperatures. What is it like in your part of North Carolina? Do you freeze there? Do you get awfully cold? Is that a long ways off?
We're probably, from a historical perspective or climatological averages, we're about 30 days from a frost yet. And we'll get night frost. Generally for us, a cold day, you guys will appreciate this, I'm sure. A cold day is if it doesn't get above freezing. That's a frigid North Carolina day.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Sometimes it's not so easy hovering right around that freezing point. It can be kind of tough. Sometimes when it's 20 below here, we know what we got. And we don't have to worry about, if it spits just a little bit outside, we're going to have ice. We're not going to have much ice at 20 below. The ice even goes away. So we do get a little colder, no doubt about that. So going into next year, what's the early call, Isaac? Are you staying with your normal rotation? Are you thinking you're going to be making any big changes on the farm?
Well, with the way beans are rallying, I would think that we may switch. We're generally about a 50-50 corn-bean rotation, but we'll have some cotton in there as well, and it kind of depends on price if that takes away from corn or if that takes away from beans. But beans right now, like I said, the way old crop is rallying is making us thinking about maybe leaning a little heavier on beans for next year.
And trait package you might go with next year?
We've been really happy with the Roundup Extend program, but I think maybe the Extend-O-Max with Liberty with another option out there for some of the resistant weeds, plus some uncertainty around that Extend label. We'd like to have a third option out there.
Yep, that's for sure. All right, Isaac, great talking to you. Good luck here with that soybean harvest.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you. Let's head up to Wisconsin. We've got Zane on with us right now. Zane, thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, guys.
Have you guys been able to get started harvesting over in your neighborhood?
Just chopping corn for the dairies. That's about it. The beans are probably 2 weeks out, and corn, a few guys have tried, and they've been in the upper 20s, low 30s for moisture.
Okay. Yep. There have been guys harvesting here now for a while, but we've been awfully dry. It was very early to get things started here. But the chopping corn even went a little early here for us, too. How did tonnage look in your part of Wisconsin?
Actually, it looked pretty good. I was just about average out. A few guys got the down at 17, 18 tons to the acre, but I heard of some guys are up to 22, 23 tons to the acre.
There you go.
So that's actually, it's about average.
Sure. Yeah, it was an interesting growing season, to say the least. How about in Wisconsin? Did you have some good weather that came through your farm, or was it a little challenging?
Actually, it was pretty good. It was a little bit of a cool spring, but a lot drier than the last 2 years. And then we got a little dry there end of June, but not horrible. Then mid-July, we kind of got some tiny rains into August, and for most crop, everything is kind of ahead of normal.
Good. You know, I was thinking about that chopping silage, and we get a lot of questions of well, because we've been talking about silage and what we're doing on our farm. Talk to us about that process for you, for guys that are doing that for the dairies. Are they typically getting manure back? Is it the same acres every year? What's the game plan up there?
Well, most of the guys around here, their manure goes on their own land. So that's there ain't too many big grain farmers that go ahead and sell corn off the field and get manure back or anything like that in my area. Most of them are just chopping for themselves, and they hire in somebody to do the chopping, but and they hire somebody to haul their manure, but it's all going on their own land.
Okay.
So
typically the same acres then, if they're in that kind of rotation, there's probably a lot of corn on corn.
A lot of corn on corn, but plus we do, guys kind of put some winter wheat in between here and there, especially guys who want to tile something. They'll put in a set aside area of a section of land or whatever to go ahead and put winter wheat in. To have beans in the year before, put in winter wheat so they can go ahead and get it off. Then they'll go ahead and tile later the following summer after the wheat's off, and usually put a little manure on there. Then once corn starts coming off, chopping, then that's usually when they're pretty heavy. Unless guy really needs a room for his manure, then they'll put on 10,000 gallons to the acre on hay ground and stuff.
Sure. Well, you mentioned tiling, so I got to ask a question on that. Is that something that you see, boy, there's a lot of ground that needs to get tiled, or are guys in your area mostly just improving some tile that's already out there?
Well, tile really did get heavy in my area until about 20 years ago. It started getting heavier. Guys have started doing it. And so we're in pretty good shape. But like in the summer of 19 and summer of 18, I don't care how much tile you had, it wasn't enough.
We had the same thing here. We thought we were well-tiled in some of these fields. We were well-tiled for 20 inches of rain, not for 40. And that changed things here. In fact, we're even out there right now as we speak, putting some tile in and improving some systems too, just to be able to handle a little more moisture than what we were used to. We're talking with Zane here in Wisconsin. Zane, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Good luck here. I know harvest is getting close.
I got a quick question here.
Oh, sure. You bet, Zane. Tell you what, we're up against a commercial break. Let me put you on hold for just a second here. We'll bring you back right after our commercial. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions all through the show today at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgro brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vasgro leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Make every bushel count with the End Zone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shutter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. With the End Zone, you can combine higher moisture beans earlier in the season to reduce field loss, then use your bin fans to naturally reach your target moisture. Condition your grain for maximum profit with the End Zone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from SipCam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
Resistant weeds got you down? Knock out tough-to-kill herbicide-resistant weeds like Palmer Amaranth and Water Hemp with Tough 5EC. Manufactured by Beltrim Crop Protection, Tough 5EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of actively growing broadleaf weeds. Add Tough 5EC to your post-emergence tank mix for enhanced control with no concerns about residual or carryover injury. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Together, we can get tough on weeds. Always read and follow label instructions.
What's the next big thing from the Roundup Ready Extend crop system? A soybean built on Roundup Ready to Extend technology, or one with glufosinate tolerance? Great news, it's both. Expected soon. Extend Flex Soybeans. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Commercial availability in 2021 is dependent on regulatory approval. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex Soybeans unless and until approved. And no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Just before the break, we were talking with Zane up in Wisconsin, who's a couple weeks away from soybean harvest, but had an agronomic question didn't have time to get to just before the break. Zane, I'm really, really hoping it's not a tiling question, or you and Brian might talk the whole rest of the show.
No, it's not on tiling.
Okay, good, good.
What I got is soil test in front of me right offhand, but I went ahead and I fertilized my corn for salix, but I just put enough fertilizer up there for 200 bushels to the acre.
Okay.
I don't got it exactly in front of me, according to the soil sample. Then I went ahead, but I spot spread manure out there, Penpac manure. So I went ahead because I do conventional till. I literally mow board plowed my manure down. But before I did that, I put on 125 units of nitrogen because I know it's going to use nitrogen to break down that manure, and manure is pretty heavy out there.
Okay.
And in the last 3 weeks or so, we had a couple nights are down like 26, 24, and lawn was white, house roof was white, ice in the windshield of the truck and stuff like that. And on that particular field next to the buildings here, which was planted June 20th, with 85-day corn, everything else is frosted. My corn is green as like it's the end of August. It's late milk, early death, but the corn is nice and green.
Okay, and you're wondering why it's green and everything else got hit?
Yeah, why did it handle the frost?
Yep, two things. Number one, there's a lot of moisture in that crop already. So, for example, if you go out to orchards, they will water trees right before a frost. The more water they have, the lower the temperature's got to be to cause an issue. That's number one. Number two is you moldboard plowed. The blacker you make that soil, the more heat is coming out of that soil. So, just to show you that, I'll tell you a little story. This is one of my favorite stories over the years. So when I was in college, and this is a long time ago, I was a little crazy, and I decided I'm going to go skydiving. And so I went with another guy from my floor in college. And anyway, it was April 30th, 70 degrees that day. And anyway, I went first out of my class of like 10 people. I'm down on the ground already. After I jumped, everything was fine. And my buddy jumped out of the plane. And his parachute opened. Everything was fine. But he was just like hanging there, like 1,000 feet above the ground. And I'm asking the instructor guy right next to me, I go, he's been up there a long time. Is he just like floating up there? What's going on? And he goes, oh, no, I see what's going on. And so he radios to him because he had a headset on, my buddy. Yep. And he goes, okay, turn over this way. What had happened is he was over a pasture. Once he got, or I should say, once he got over a pasture, then he could come down. Where he was and why he was hanging up in the air is he was over a plowed field. And the instructor goes, look, that's a plowed field right there. There's so much heat coming off of that thing that that's what's propelling him. It's keeping him up in the air. It's just so much more heat. You get him over the pasture, he comes right down. And so it wasn't about 3 years later on our farm, we had a late spring frost. And sure enough, everywhere where we were doing no-till, we got hit. I mean, it got hit hard and killed some crop and everything else. Anywhere where we had plowed or done like massive tillage and made the ground black, it was just fine.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that to do with the color, because I know it'll be like 60 degrees out. It'd even be a pretty, if that sun's out, you walk in that cornfield, it'll make you sweat walking into that cornfield.
Yep.
That's what I was thinking, it'll just hold in the heat because of the, because what's in the moisture and being so green yet.
Yep.
So. All right, that does make sense.
So, okay.
All right, thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Zane. We'll see
you. Thanks, Zane.
Bye.
All right, next question. This one comes from Wes asking about spraying for mosquitoes. He said, I'm wondering about spraying for mosquitoes. I use a form of bifenthrin, and last year went pretty well. Very few issues with how things worked. But this year has been pretty challenging, and some customers that I've done some spraying for have had some issues too. Just wondering if there's something I should use instead of bifenthrin. In the past, I've gotten at least 21 days worth of activity out of it. Is there something else I should be doing?
Okay, almost everybody spraying mosquitoes is using some form of pyrethroid. Now, there are several different ones out there. If you want to move away from bifenthrin or use a combination of bifenthrin and whatever, permethrin, sumethrin, I mean, there are a number of different pyrethroids you can get. And the reason why the pyrethroids are so popular is they are relatively safe to humans. They come from the part of the chrysanthemum flower, yes, a flower, that can control insects. So it's pretty awesome. Anyway, in addition to that, I would consider using some malathion. Now, I don't love the malathion, although because it's an organophosphate. So it's definitely different chemistry, a little more harsh chemistry, but still considered relatively safe, the most safe of the organophosphates. But you could put a little bit of malathion in with your one of the pyrethroids, and that would do a pretty good job. So, yeah, I understand mosquitoes in some areas were pretty bad this year, especially this spring when it was wet, and you know the last couple of years had been real wet, so that led to issues. I would say, though, as a natural way to reduce mosquito issues, if you can always keep the water moving, then you're in good shape. Anytime there are little ponds, and it could be just, any little indention in the soil and water is standing there for a while, that's a breeding ground for mosquitoes. So the more that all of us can keep the water moving, the less issue we're going to have with mosquitoes.
All right, thanks for the question, Wes. We really appreciate that. We got one here from somebody wondering about telling the difference between smectite and illite clay types and wondering about potassium availability in wet and dry soils.
Okay, I wouldn't worry too much about the potassium thing in terms of the difference between the two types of clay. What we're always looking at is what's your percent of potassium in that base saturation test. But then when you talk about wet and dry soils, I'd say this. We farm in a dry area of the country. We haven't had rain in 3 months now. Or I shouldn't say that. We've had a tiny little bit of rain in 3 months. But when your soil gets dry, keep in mind potassium and a lot of other nutrients, but potassium is a huge one where your crop could need hundreds of pounds of potassium. Hundreds. It goes in with water. Well, if you're lacking in water, there's less potassium that's going to get into the plant, right? So that means that, like for me, in dry country with no irrigation, I need a higher level of potassium in the soil to get the same amount of potassium into the plant, okay? So instead of just looking at maybe 4 or 5% base saturation K, I really want to be at 7%, maybe even 8% base saturation potassium, okay? In terms of the illite clay, that's real. It's named after the state of Illinois, by the way. It's very common across much of the Midwestern United States. The smectite clay, we often call montmorillonite. That's kind of a type of smectite clay. So we usually just talk montmorillonite clay. But either way, montmorillonite or smectite, you're looking at usually high levels of magnesium. The higher your magnesium and calcium in your soil, the more potassium parts per million it's going to take to get your base saturation potassium level up. Okay, so it's basically a little bit heavier soil, little higher cation exchange capacity in a lot of cases. So I usually will think about the montmorillonite clay as a little bit heavier clay than the illite clay. How do you tell the difference between the two? I don't know. I certainly can't do it by looking at them. I would send it in for some kind of analysis if you really want to know. To me, I don't care. I just care about what's my cation exchange capacity, what's my pH in the soil, and how are my ratios looking? How do I have enough of each individual nutrient out there to feed my crop? So that's what I'm looking at.
All right, thanks for that question. We really appreciate that. Our phone lines are open here throughout the rest of the show. If you have an agronomic question, you can call us at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We'll get to it. We're in the Ag PhD mailbag here throughout the end of the show today. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability and boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
Hey Adam, new drone?
Not just any drone.
I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree!
In the power lines! Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor Herbicide Brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Our phone lines are open if you have an agronomic question or want to talk about what's going on in your farm at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head out to Eastern Montana. Got Brent on with us right now. Brent, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
All right, what's on your mind today?
Oh, I have some CRP that come out this year, and I would like to spray it this fall. And a little bit of grass is growing back, and some alfalfa is coming.
Wait, what did you say?
What
did you say was growing back?
Grass and alfalfa.
A little bit of grass and alfalfa.
Got it. Okay.
And I would like to seed peas into it next spring.
Okay.
So I guess my question is, would you just go with a stiff rate of Roundup, or would you throw something else in with it?
Okay, and the alfalfa is not Roundup-resistant alfalfa, correct?
No, correct.
Okay, well, I got to ask. And how have you had a killing frost yet?
I don't know, probably got down to like 29, 28 here a couple weeks ago, but that's it.
Okay, so it looks like stuff is actively growing out in the field, is what you're telling me.
Yep.
Okay, and how about our temperatures over the next, let's say, 3 to 5 days? Pretty warm?
Yeah, upper 60s, lower 70s.
Okay, so, and the reason why I'm asking these questions is when you look back at data on Roundup studies over the years, if you can get it done before your first hard killing frost, then control's quite good. If it's after that point, then control is not nearly as good. So if it's me, I'm probably just going to go out there with the Roundup because it's really inexpensive and just call it good at that. What a lot of people will do is they'll throw Roundup out for grass, and then for alfalfa and other broadleaves, they'll throw 2,4-D or dicamba in. You can do that, but the problem is the 2,4-D and dicamba won't kill the roots very well. So you end up with the Roundup, which could get down into that root system over 3 to 5 days, but it won't because the dicamba or 2,4-D will shut the plant down too quickly. So yeah, I'm just going to run out there with the highest labeled rate of, in your country, probably RT3. That's what I would do.
Okay. With the comment of 3 to 5 days, if I go out and spray it, let's per se tomorrow, would you wait 3 to 5 days? I was going to do some vertical tillage on it after I sprayed it. You'd wait 3 to 5 days.
Yeah. Now, you don't necessarily have to go all the way out to five. The warmer it is, the faster you can get back in there. But yeah, I do want to give it some time. And there are people who will tell you as little as 24 hours, maybe 48 hours. You know what? If things are hot and things were growing super well, which means the herbicide will move super quickly, it's possible that you could go out there in 24 to 48 hours. But I'd rather be on the safe side. I just spent the time and effort to go out and spray it, spent some money. I want to get the best performance. So yeah, I would tell you wait 3 to 5 days.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. Good luck.
Thanks, Brent. Thank you.
Yep.
Got a question from John in Northwest Arkansas, and he sent a picture in. He said, I've got this weed in my yard, and it's taken over my flower beds and my yard. Do you have any idea what it is? And, you know, it looks very similar to Creeping Charlie, but that's not what it is. It's something in that ground ivy family. And those are some tough weeds, especially if it's in your flower beds. I don't have a great solution for you other than Roundup. So if you could spray Roundup in a directed spray and not get the flowers, that would be fantastic. Now, out in your yard, I would recommend using 2,4-D. I would recommend using strong rates. If you could possibly get a hold of something along the lines of Freelex that would have 2,4-D choline in it, like Enlist One has got, that would be my first choice because that's got the least amount of drift. But as we get later into the fall, you've got less desirable plants around. You're not as much worried about if there's just a little bit of volatilization or the trees may have already dropped their leaves, those kinds of things. And you think, okay, I'm pretty safe to go out and spray any kind of 2,4-D. You could certainly do that responsibly as well. So that would be my choice. Now, I would say this, with a perennial type weed, with that kind of root system and plant type, it's going to take multiple applications for several years to wipe it out. So get after it as soon as you can. If you do Roundup, you'll wipe it out really quick. But if you have to go with the 2,4-D route, like out in your yard where you have desirable grasses, then it's just going to take a little more work and a little longer time period. Thanks for the question, John. Really appreciate that.
in our last segment, we were talking to Zane from Wisconsin about his corn that was still looking awfully green even after frost, and we were talking about the plowed field. He sent a little video of must be the neighbor's cornfield. Then he walks across the road and shows his cornfield. It looks to me like he just planted later, much later corn. Now, granted, he didn't plant until June 20th. So by later corn, what I mean is between the June 20th planting and the 85-day corn, it wasn't scheduled to finish until really late. We kind of had the same thing on our farm. I wanted to take out some strips that we left after we'd done silage. So I went out last night. It's like, yeah, some of it hasn't even reached black layer yet. Now, normally that would be no big deal around here, and it is no big deal this year. We're fine. There's no problem with that. But it's just this year we had so much heat that all our normal corn, you know, that we plant 97 to 108-day corn usually, well, we'd planted some 113, or that was maybe even 116. We just did it for silage, but I thought, hey, let's leave a couple strips. We'll harvest it. We'll see how the yield is and everything. Well, we're going to be waiting just a little while because that isn't even at black layer yet. And it looks to me like that's Zane's situation here. He just hasn't had enough heat units for that corn to mature, and the corn across the road has.
Well, what's tricky, though, too, Brian, is that different companies rate maturities on hybrids completely different.
Well, yes.
And you may buy from one company, and they say, well, this is 105-day corn, and you buy from another, and they would classified that same corn as 100.
I agree with that, but I mean, let's face it, his deal was June 20th planting. And when you're going for silage, I totally get that. I'm all for planting late. I mean, that's real late, but we didn't ask him if he was doing something earlier in the spring. Maybe he had, who knows, some rye, took a cutting off that, then seeded the corn. I don't know. Doesn't matter. The point is that corn is just simply not mature yet. It is not ready to go. I mean, for grain harvest.
All right, thanks for the comments there, Zane. It was fun talking to you today. All right, get this one from Fisher, who says, wondering, is plant sap analysis more precise than tissue analysis, or is tissue analysis sufficient? Apparently, the sap analysis allows better interpretation of mobile nutrients. Simultaneous soil and tissue sampling is a great point that you've got, though. Any opinion on that?
Okay, well, first of all, his original question is, what is more accurate? I don't know that necessarily one is more accurate than the other, the sap analysis or the plant tissue analysis. From everything I read, it's similar. But all analysis is only as accurate as the machines or the people running the machines. So I don't know, you know, who's doing this, if you're trying to do it yourself, whatever. In terms of the sap giving you a better idea on the mobile nutrients, I don't know that I can say that either. Everything I read, I'm not seeing that. Let's say nitrogen is pretty mobile in the plant. I don't know that sap analysis is any better than tissue analysis. I'm assuming where that's coming from is just that since nitrogen does move in the plant, maybe it's already moved to some of the new growth. And if you're taking some older growth as the leaves and testing them for your leaf analysis, maybe that doesn't give you an accurate reflection. But, you know, there are a lot of variances. Even during the day, you'll see variances with both the tissue sampling, the sap analysis, everything. It varies. So what we always tell people is, look, just get a baseline for yourself. And like for us, for example, we take our plant tissue analysis first thing every Monday morning each week during the growing season. Okay, so now we've got a baseline. Now we know where we're at all the time, and then we can look at yield at the end. We can compare soil tests, everything else, see how that affected the tissue analysis. So there's a little bit of a learning curve there. And unfortunately, there aren't labs or universities that I've found anyway that can tell you, oh, you need to be exactly this for this yield goal at this time of day, at this stage of growth, everything else. We're just not there. And it's a little unfortunate, and I hope more people do research on that. I'm looking forward to that research in the future. That would be great. But right now, you kind of have to do it yourself.
Got some great feedback here from Adrian. He said he was listening to the show today talking about how plowed land would be different than pasture ground, for example, for heat coming out. He had some canola. They tilled around the outside edge of the field. That canola ended up not getting touched by frost. The stuff that was no-till in the middle of the field got smoked. Hey, Adrian, thank you a lot. Really appreciate that feedback, and thanks for listening to the show today. Thanks to you for listening, and be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.